Okay. Welcome back. I'm number two on this Tuesday night. Frosty Wooldridge is back with us. Lives at 24,000 feet, is it, at Golden, Colorado? I can't keep these heights right.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. Yeah,
well, you have a good
8,000
you have
feet
such
in
a,
Golden, Colorado, in the Rocky
Mountains.
Well,
that's why you have such a good view of things. You're way up there.
Oh, yeah, I've got quite a view. I get to see the Continental Divide every day as it runs south of my house,
right.
And those mountains are 14,000 footers, and the entire Continental Divide is dramatic, it's compelling, and it's very high. You know, it's amazing when you think about all the skiers at Chamonix and Andermatt and all the big Swiss ski resorts. Their highest mountains for their skiing, 8,000 to 9,000 feet. But when you get over here, you're skiing, say at Winter Park, you're skiing at 12,000 feet. If you're going to A Basin, you're going to 12,000.
People have to pass out. They have to pass out sometimes, don't they? They're not used to that.
Well, some get altitude sickness. It's called Soroche in South America, you know. And I actually skied at one point at the highest ski resort in the world. It's called Chuquitaya outside of Bolivia, and we skied there. But we were in such great shape because we bicycled. And but it was 17,000 feet at Chuquitaya. And that's the highest, I can say it's the highest ski resort in the world, no problem. But flatlanders, when they get into high altitude, they will suffer high altitude sickness and they'll have a pounding headache. I've actually had people just 30 miles from my house, I ride a bicycle up Mount Evans, and it's the highest road in America. It's 14,200 feet to get to the top of Mount Evans. And I've skied up it, I've biked up it, I've climbed up it, I've had people, we race up to the top. It's a 14 miles to get to the top. And some people get near the top and they just get pounding headaches and they just can't continue and they have to descend immediately or they could suffer a cerebral edema. And literally die. It has its dangers, no question about it.
All right. Now, what's new? Where do we want to start? You're always into so many things. Where do you want to go?
Well, you know, first of all, I want to share with everyone my letter to the editors of Time Magazine concerning
which you mentioned last time. Yeah.
And it was by Alana Samuels, and it's in the March 14, 2022 issue of Time Magazine under Why Isn't Inflation Ending? And one of the things that I hope that everybody in America understands is that the mainstream media is never going to tell you the truth about what's really going on in this country. And I get a Time Magazine, the hard copy, just so I can stay in touch with the mainstream media. You know, whether it's a Jake Tapper character or a John Dickerson or literally Meet the Press with Chuck Todd. It's almost maddening to have them reporting on things that are simply inane, useless, and non-productive, and certainly a non-learning experience. You would think that the top news people would want to educate the American people so that they're aware of what they're facing and what they're dealing with.
They are not journalists. They're anything but. They're whores. They're performers. They're just actors. That's all they are. They're readers. Go ahead.
That's exactly it. And so Alana Samuels wrote a story that was featured in Time Magazine about how and why we're suffering from inflation, and that we need more immigrants, we need more babies, and more birth rates. So here, as I ask you to listen to my reply to them. This is my LTE to Time Magazine over this absolutely absurd article written by Alana Samuels. And I also had I asked them to send a piece to her, too. Yeah. While Time magazine enjoys a stable of excellent writers, this piece in Good Question marks a total loss of scientific common sense and reasoned thinking. To push for more immigration and more population stands as the pinnacle of outdated thinking. As a civilization, we're facing another 100 million more people, virtually 90-plus percent of it from immigration and birth rates, by the year of 2050. What does it take to knock some sense and intelligence into contributors of Time magazine? And then the quote by my former friend, the late Dr. Albert Bartlett, who was a brilliant physicist and at the University of Colorado, and we spoke on the same stages in Washington, D.C., and he gave his incredible program. But he said, and I'm quoting, "Unlimited population growth cannot be sustained. You cannot sustain growth in the rates of consumption of resources. No species can overrun the carrying capacity of a finite landmass. This law cannot be repealed and is not negotiable," unquote. And then I go on and say, we're facing catastrophic climate destabilization that will destroy our civilization, extraordinary animal extinction rates, water shortages, plastic oceans, gridlock cities, horrific air pollution, acid rain, 83 chemicals being injected into the air, land, and water 24/7. But you're pushing for higher population levels? Why? What brand of intelligence are you using to think? Third grade level? And here's a quote by Nobel laureate Dr. Henry W. Kendall. "If we don't halt population growth with justice and compassion, it will be done for us by nature, brutally and without pity, and we will leave a ravaged world," unquote. My next thought is, you Time editors need to take a long look at what you're promoting. What will your children think about your choices as they wade through and compete with another 100 million poor people added to the United States in 2050. We are projected to jump from 335 million in 2022 to 440 million by mid-century. How much worse will it be for their lives? Answer, much worse. And then in the article, Alana Samuels quoted the economist Ron Hetrick. And he said, and I'm quoting, "If immigration does not improve, in other words, increase, I'm not sure how we get back to perpetual growth," unquote. Well, economist Kenneth Boulding, also of Colorado University, where I have lectured myself, said, and I'm quoting, "Anyone who believes in infinite growth in anything physical on a physically finite planet is either a madman or an economist," unquote. And so my question is to Time magazine, why not publish writers that give the facts, not emotions? Fire Alana Samuels and hire a writer that does the research and writes with intelligence, not emotions. Uh-huh. Frosty Wooldridge, Golden, Colorado.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to everyone listening to this broadcast? Or does Alana make sense to perpetuate and to promote another 100 million people added to this country? I mean, Jeff, common sense would tell you that this is not the way we want to go. And yet, this is what the mainstream press does to the American people. It refuses to educate them. It's got its own policies, and Jake Tapper's and John Dickerson's and Meet the Press and Face the Nation and all the, and even 60 Minutes, they're paid to give a biased opinion piece each time they do, and that's why the American people are just literally driving blind into the future.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, they're driving blind because they're looking down at their screen trying to text.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, and it's amazing because I go to city council meetings here in Golden, Colorado, and I've gone to other city councils around Denver because right now Colorado is standing at 5.7 million people, and Denver is at 2.6 million. And within the next 30 years, within 3 decades, Denver's going to jump another 2 million people and I think hit around 4.7. But the state of Colorado is going to jump 3 million to 8.7 million. And here's the kicker. Golden City Council keeps adding more and more buildings, which adds more and more people, and they're adding hotels, and they're turning everything into concrete, and I jump on them with just the facts. And so with Colorado adding another 3 million people, or you could call them resource competitors, okay, and that could happen in every state of the union, resource competitors. When you add more population, you have more people competing for resources, water, energy, resources. And so if you add 3 million people to Colorado, and we're an arid state, and we're also in a sixth year of an exceptional drought, well, how much does 3 million more people added to this state cost us in gallons per day? Well, the fact is that most Americans and Coloradans use 80 gallons of water to shower, shave, flush the toilet, sprinkle the lawn, wash the clothes, and more water-using activities every 24 hours. So if you take
80
3
million
a day. More people,
okay. Got
yeah, you take 3
right.
million times yeah. 80 gallons, that's 240 million more gallons on top of the 456 million gallons that our current population uses every day here in the state of Colorado. Do the same thing for your own state. Look up your own state. Look up the population of your own state. And I'll give you an example. California, 39 million people. Think of what it takes to water 39 million people times 80 gallons. And so when you start adding up the amount of water that it's going to take to add another 3 million people to Colorado, you've got an enormous problem facing every citizen in this state. And so I ask at the end of this letter to the editor of the Golden Transcript, at some point, when you turn your tap on, there won't be any water. Is there any chance that the Golden City Council might choose another path towards sustainability for future generations? Let's become the first city to have golden stop growth policy in Colorado. Let's choose sustainability and viability over the insanity of perpetual growth. And that was just sent in, and I put a PS at the end of it. Mind you, there will be another 100 million people demanding water throughout the USA here in the next 28 years, especially in Arizona, which is a dry desert state, California, which is pretty much a dry desert state, and Nevada,
yeah,
which is also totally a desert. And so, you know, here I am, just a rational person writing letters to the editor or responding to Time Magazine, but you can't get that kind of reality check through 60 Minutes. You won't get it through NPR. You won't get it through PBS. And that is the exasperation for me that the American people are being duped. They're being lied to. They're simply not being told the truth as to what's going on in this country right now, and they will not tell the American people what's coming. And that's the crisis we're facing. And you know, and notice the gasoline prices right now are in California are $6 and $7 a gallon. Did anybody tell you that was going to happen? No. Why? Because those people at the top are so corrupt, and the mainstream media is so corrupt with them that they're going to let the crisis hit us instead of doing something before and actually change course. And that is what we're facing as a country and as a people.
Frosty, it's the plan. This has all been gamed out. It's all been done. And what we're doing now is watching it unfold.
Right.
And they're not going to change it.
No. As a matter of fact,
sorry to say, the people are not going to people. And forgive me, those of you who are really dedicated, sincere, absolutely heartfelt in your efforts at activism, it just don't get hurt. Stand up, make your statement, but don't get hurt, because they're going to do what they damn well want, and there's nothing you're going to do to stop them ultimately. I hope that doesn't sound defeatist or negative. But I know these people, I know who they are, and I know what they're going to do, and they're doing it. And we are going to be in such trouble in the next few months, everything from food to cash. You watch what happens. All planned. Hard to believe, but it's true. Prepare. You still have a little chance. Put that food away. Go ahead.
Well, yes, and as I said in the past, whether, you know, and I listened to, he's a UFC fighter from Arkansas. I think it was, no,
yeah,
it was Oklahoma.
Yeah, that got a lot of play. He made
a lot of play.
Statement. Yeah.
You know, and what I liked about that young man was he told the basic truths.
Mm-hmm.
He told that Nancy Pelosi was an absolutely corrupt politician for the last 40 years in Congress. She's a multi-million, I think over 124 million. She insider traded all the defense contracts. She voted for all of the 20 years of the war in Afghan and in Iraq. And she gets away with it. And she's one of hundreds of those people in Congress, you know, all 535 of them. I don't know what number of them have been insider trading and made all that money over the last 20 years, but you better believe it was probably at least half of them or more. Because why? Because all of them voted for those wars to continue for 20 years. And so that leads me into, and what he said was, we're being duped, you know, and, you know, all the things that are going on in Ukraine right now, you know, this young man said he would fight for, you know, his roots there in Oklahoma or Arkansas. No, sure. It was Oklahoma. And he would fight for his country, and he'd fight for, but he's not going to go over there and fight over in Ukraine. It's their business, and we really don't know what's going on over there. But we do, and he brought this up. Hunter Biden is a part of Joe Biden and the complete fraud of all the oil and gas, and Hunter Biden using his father's vice presidential name at the time to get a job on a Ukraine oil company board of directors for $50,000 a month, so Joe Biden could direct oil to you know, whatever he wanted to, and create all of this corruption that's going on and being a part of it. That's Joe Biden. And that's his corrupt life, and that's his corrupt legacy. But it's also ours, because this guy, who has lied so many times in his lifetime, from 47 years ago in Congress all the way till now, he doesn't know the truth from a lie, because he tells so many lies that he thinks they're the truth. And yet we're the ones paying the price for this. And so I would really invite everyone to go to rinse.com under my category tonight, and I wanted to talk about war. And the title of the column is War, Death, Destruction, and Human Misery on the Little Guy. And so I think everyone remembers all the big men of World War II: Hitler, Mussolini, Goebbels, Stalin, Rommel, Hirohito of Japan, Eisenhower, Patton, Montgomery, Churchill, Doolittle, Nimitz, and all of those big guys. And they grabbed the headlines, and they were showered with medals as well as prominent titles in the history books. Isn't it ironic that none of them fought or died in the fields of the Battle of the Bulge, or Midway, or Iwo Jima, or Corregidor, or Normandy, and every nameless town in Europe? And the reason this is so poignant for me is because in 2005 I rode my bicycle from Nordkap, Norway, over 4,000 miles all the way to Athens, Greece. Well, I skipped over the Adriatic Sea there on a freighter. But I got to go through all of the cemeteries in Germany where all these 17 and 18 and 19 and 20-year-old kids were conscripted into the Nazi army, and they died, you know, and they got killed by the millions. And many of you probably saw Tom Hanks in Saving Private Ryan, and you got a taste of the ugly hand-to-hand combat in that movie. There was a particularly goring moment when the U.S. Army cowered. There was a kid in the platoon that was a coward, and he sat on the stairs while the German soldier shoved a knife into the chest of one of the guys in the platoon, which was one of his platoon mates. Well, that's what war is all about, one man killing another man from a different country. So when you look back at Korea and Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan, you might recall General Westmoreland from Vietnam. But you won't be able to remember a single kid who died on those battlefields unless, of course, your child or husband died or a close family member. Well, I'm one of those guys that had friends die in that war. in fact, my roommate was drafted, and he died in that war. And do you know the names of the millions of innocent civilians that were 18, 19, 20, kids forced into uniform, forced into combat, and forced to die these miserable deaths? Well, the answer is, unless you had some close relative, you don't. But millions of these kids, and I was one of these kids during the Vietnam War, scared to death. And then I will say this, every veteran listening to this broadcast knows there are no heroes in wars. If you lucked out, a bullet didn't have your name on it. And for every guy on the Vietnam War Memorial, a bullet, bomb, napalm, or even a punji stake or shrapnel carried that kid's name on it. And if that bullet missed you, you've enjoyed a long and hopefully fulfilling life. You know, and why it's so poignant for me is because I was that 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old kid. I was in boot camp in Fort Benning. And one of my best friends in high school joined the Navy SEALs during Vietnam. And the reason he did was because his father was an Air Force colonel, and that was just the expectation. So later, he wished he would have fled to Canada. He said, it's a banker's war not to be won or lost. Just keep making money for the banksters. And then one of his buddies got blasted away right next to him during a firefight in the Mekong Delta. And he wrote me a story about it. It's just gut-wrenching. And pieces of his buddy's body fell over his shoulders and his face. And then after he came back alive, just lucky as hell, three divorces, three marriages, three divorces, and a lifetime of his brain being destroyed by post-traumatic stress disorder. And he now lives with his two dogs. And he said to me, Frosty, my mind is not right, and it never will be. And so now we have this thing going on in Ukraine, and I want to follow up on that after we have this break. But this Ukraine thing just brings me back to a lot of pain and a lot of suffering.
Understood. Understood. All right, we'll be right back with Frosty and more in just a few minutes. Hold on. All right, welcome back. Frosty is here tonight. He's here twice a month. Frosty Wooldridge. All right, the column up there is War, Death, Destruction, and Human Misery on the Little Guy. A lot of little guys go away and never come back. You never hear about them again. Gone. Just the way war is. And think about the civilian losses. They're the ones who seemingly pay the worst price. Almost invariably.
Well, that's correct. You know, and what I wanted to share with everyone in this, the little guy, because really, all of us are the little guys. I mean, there's just a few people up there that are the, you know, the big leaders of the world and all that goes with that. But in the end, it's all of us little guys that, you know, those kids that, you know, I think you've seen it on social media, the landing craft, LSTs they're called, going on to Normandy. And you look at those faces of those kids. I was 17 back then. You know, I was 18. I was in boot camp when I was 19.
Yeah.
You know, and you just sit there and honest to God, you go from a athletic life, and you go from, you know, you're studying, and you, I used to book 7 days a week. I didn't even date in college because I was so dedicated to my studies and also, you know, racquetball and tennis just to keep my, you know, keep my body in tune.
Whatever happened to racquetball? That was a good sport.
Oh,
is it still around?
Oh, yeah. There's racquetball courts all over the country, and there's still many aficionados who play racquetball. But, you know, tennis obviously is a greater, it just has a lot more following and is much more famous. And racquetball today is not as participated in as it once was.
It was hot at one point. It was.
Oh, yeah. Marty Hogan.
I played it.
Oh, yeah.
It was fun.
Oh my God! You put 1,000 calories an hour.
Yeah.
You take all your troubles go away. They melt away. You don't get hurt. You know, well, you get a ball in the back of the butt once in a while. But anyway, yeah, racquetball is great. But my whole goal was I was the first kid in my family to get a college degree. You know, and I worked to earn it.
And really?
So
good job.
I was the first kid. You know, and thank you. And and my parents were proud of me, and you know, it was really great, and so I was thankful. But when I got that my junior year, when I went into Fort Benning in the United States mm-hmm. Army, oh my God! I mean, all of a sudden you're trained to become a killer. I mean, you know, what's the call of the bayonet killer, bayonet fighter, to kill, drill mm-hmm. sergeant, to kill. And you got to scream it out, and you got to yell it out, and you actually have to go into combat. I mean, they have combat training and boot camp, and you're doing everything you can to kill the other guy. And you know, you go on the rifle range, and you go on to the night maneuvers, and there's live rounds and tracers going over your head. I mean, it scares the living pee out of you. Mm-hmm. And then you got the bunkers blowing up, but they want to get you ready for combat. You know, and Vietnam, oh my God. I mean, I knew after I had gotten out of basic training alive, I was just a walking dead man. I mean, because, you know, lieutenants in the infantry, mm-hmm. they get killed really quickly during, you know, night maneuvers in Vietnam or the whole nine yards. I mean, it was insane. And yet that's what happened to me. And I got the feeling about what it's like to be a little guy. And in war, I can say this with certitude. The little guy, as long as they're breathing and as long as they can carry a weapon, or as long as they can shoot the tank, as long as they can shoot a law, as long as they can be a sniper, they're part of a killing machine. But as soon as they get shot or wounded, nobody cares. They lose a leg, they lose an arm, they lose parts of their face. The napalm drops on them. I mean, it all of a sudden you're just a casualty, or you're just human chattel. And when I was at Fort Benning, these kids were coming back missing their hands, missing their legs. They were faces burned away, their noses burned off, their ears burned off, sure, from napalm, sure, from friendly fire. Because in war, you're just lucky if you live, unlucky if you die. That's how it is. You know, there's the Audie Murphys out there, and there's the General Westmorelands, and or even Colin Powells, who make it through and they live and they get to be big generals and so forth. But most of us are the ones that go to our early graves. And if anybody doesn't understand that, just go to Washington D.C. and go to the Vietnam War Memorial, go to the Korea Memorial. But I think the Vietnam Memorial, where it's got 58,479 names on there of young kids just like me that died and didn't get to live their lives, didn't get to go to school, didn't get to kiss their sweetheart, didn't get to play flag football, didn't get to be a whatever it is they wanted to become, yeah, and become a father, and they just didn't. You know, and you go to that wall, and I've got friends on that wall, and I can tell you this. If you ever see me there, and I go there often, I just weep uncontrollably. And so right now, you know, I'm not saying anything. You know, Putin is doing what he's doing, and Zelensky's trying to, save his country. But what I'm saying is those young Russian soldiers, and I don't know how many have died, they will kill and they will be killed. And they're only 17, 18, 19, 20, maybe 30.
Oh, they're kids. Teenagers.
They're kids.
Many of them.
And
yeah,
then it's all those forgotten civilians fleeing with their children, over 2 million now, who have fled into Poland, Romania, and Moldova.
Yep.
And millions more could die from starvation and bitter cold. And do you think somebody like Putin or the rest of these aggressors give a damn? I mean, in the end, whether you look at Stalin or you look at Hitler or Hirohito, they're all sociopaths because they're amoral. And so for somebody like me who lost friends in Vietnam, I'll give you an example. My roommate, he got drafted right out of our room in my sophomore year because he wasn't in the top half of the class at Michigan State. There were 44,000 students at Michigan State, and you have to be in the top half if you're a male or you can get drafted. You lose your 1, your 2S. He got drafted, and he went to Leavenworth, and he went to advanced infantry training at Fort Polk, which we used to call Fort Puke, because that's what you did most of the time, was puke your guts out because you're getting literally physically trashed all the time. Mm-hmm. But anyway, when he finally went off to Vietnam, he came by in East Lansing right there in my room in the dorm, in Wonders Hall there. And he said, Frosty, I got something for you here. And he gave me this gold peace ring. And I can tell you, it's been on my finger now since 1968. It's a gold peace ring. If you ever shake hands with me, you can't miss it. It's just a little gold peace ring, and it's been there. And he said, if I get back, we'll have a beer and laugh about it. And if I don't, I want you to wear this peace ring and be a man of peace for the rest of your life. Well, he didn't make it back, and so I've carried Phil and his memory with me since 1968. And when I look back, I mean, I could have been me. I could have been the one that got drafted. And it was, in fact, the next year, that's when I joined ROTC, to make sure I didn't get drafted and at least extend my ability to finally graduate and then, you know, go on from there. And so for me, I saw kids my age with missing arms, legs, eyes, hands, skin burned off, and so forth. And so I can tell you, I'm one of the little guys. And personally, and I bet you every veteran that's listening to this broadcast, I hope that Lyndon Baines Johnson, who lied about the Gulf of Tonkin incident and the resolution, and Richard Nixon and General Westmoreland and the pack of jackals in the military-industrial complex, all share a jail cell in hell. And to join them, Dick Cheney and Rumsfeld and all the rest of those liars, they all need to share a jail cell in hell, because they perpetuate these wars, they create these wars. Robert McNamara, right in there with him, because he is really the engineer that created the Vietnam War. And all for what? It absolutely meant nothing. It didn't stop anything. It didn't change anything. It just got, you know, all these kids killed, and then over 2.3 million civilians in Vietnam got killed because of it, and it still ended up, you know, Vietnam. And I'm going to share this with you because this is probably one of the more poignant stories of my life. When I was bicycling from Nordkap, Norway, to Athens, Greece, my friend Gary Hall, who was a Navy veteran, and I stopped, we both stopped south of the Po River in Italy to walk among the dead American and British graveyard of 500 kids. And there was a podium there and had all their names on it, and it had all of their births, and it had where they were from. And they were engraved on the gravestones. And it was a gray area, and there was a little ridge at the top. And virtually all of them were 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, just kids. And these are the same kids that pushed the Germans out of Italy, north, and under Montgomery, and I think it was under Patton. I'm not sure. They got sniped, they got bombed, they got bermed, they got blasted by artillery. Still, they faced the Germans with iron resolve because they were trained, just like I was there in Fort Benning. And anyway, we camped above on a ridge. We camped above that night, all these kids. In the morning, Gary kind of took off. He just wanted to get out of there. But I lingered. I'm an emotional guy. And so I lingered. And I got the idea, and as I was, you know, at that podium, I was reading all their names, and I got the idea, and something came over me to invite each and one of their spirits to climb out of their graves and mount their bicycles and ride with me through the valley leading south. And I said, okay, you boys, let's share some pedal time. Probably going to get emotional. Let's ride together. Each of you deserves to ride this road in peace, in sheer joy, and the freedom of pedaling a bicycle. So sure enough, all 500 of them jumped out of their graves, hopped on their bicycles, and they rode with me for an hour. And I heard them, you know, bullshitting with their buddies as they rode along, because we all do on a bike ride. And some of them cheered and raised their hands to the sky. And that's what I do when I'm enjoying a bicycle ride anywhere in the world. And what they did allowed me to do what I do when I ride my bicycle, to enjoy the sheer pleasure of a simple bicycle ride. And I know every one of you out there across the world right now, I know you've been on a bicycle, and what a joy it is to pedal your bicycle, talk with your friends. Well, we all deserve to do that. You know, we all deserve, we shouldn't be going to war. People in the leadership positions should respect everybody else, and leaders of countries should just respect everybody's right to live. And so anyway, after an hour, I stopped, looked back, and I waved to all their spirits, and I said, I know you boys have got to return to your resting places. It was an honor to ride with your spirits. Right. I bid you adieu, and God bless you. And in that moment, all five of them, 500 of them, waved, and they turned around and pedaled back to their final resting place.
Understood.
And this happened, and again, like I say, I get pretty emotional, but later on...
That's an amazing thing to hear, Frosty. Thank you for sharing that.
You're most welcome. Anyway, that evening, we rode through a small Italian village to see a bunch of Italians eating pizzas in front of a cafe. And as we pulled the bikes over, you know, and notice we're all loaded up, and we've got little patches on us, and you can tell we're Americans. I mean, Gary was 6'4", I'm 6'2". And anyway, coming up the street was an 80-year-old Italian man hobbling toward us. And when he reached us, he said, oh, this is tough. Are you American veterans?
Yeah.
And we replied, Army and Navy.
Yes.
And he walked up to us and he embraced us with one of the most emotional hugs I've ever encountered. He said, thank you for saving my family in the big war.
Wow.
And with that, after the hug he gave both of us, he hobbled down the street, but his memory remains with me until my last breath.
Understood.
So,
of course.
So I when you see these wars that these big people perpetuate on all of us little people.
Oh, they're monsters, Frosty. They're not human. They're not human.
They're monsters. And so each Russian kid who dies in Ukraine, and I don't know how many thousand have already died, and to each Ukraine kid who dies defending his country, my heart goes out to the little guy that doesn't get to grow up, doesn't get to get married, doesn't get to go to work, doesn't have a family, doesn't get to ride a bike, doesn't get to play sports, doesn't get to kiss his sweetheart.
Why do they refer to alleged human beings as the sentient caretaker species of this planet? These are not the behaviors of intelligence. These are the behaviors of sick psychopaths and worse. I won't go into the vocabulary now. These are not people who are worthy of being on this planet, those who destroy it and kill like this. Every one of these young people who dies, male, female, doesn't matter, leaves a hole, an aching, black, bleeding hole in the heart of his or her loved ones for the rest of their lives. It's
exactly
geometric,
true. The
way it rolls into the fabric of this species of ours. It just goes, and it never heals. It can't heal.
No, it can't
so,
heal. No.
It's just, we all understand exactly what you're saying, and thank you for presenting it that way, because it's the truth. It's the God's truth, and it is what it is. We are in the hands of inhuman evil. You can call it satanic, demonic, whatever you want. These people are not our equals. They are dirt under our feet, and yet they somehow have figured out how to control and kill and destroy for profit. That's what they do.
That's what they do. You know, and so to each one of you listening to this hour, and Jeff and I, you know, we've been friends for 20 years, and we've been doing this. And, you know, we are all decent human beings doing the very best we can. You know, whether we're a guy or a girl, whether we're a student or a retiree, you know, for all of us, I hope each human around the world condemns this insane war that's going on right now. And I hope you're doing everything you can to bring peace, you know, not only in Ukraine, but also in Russia. And I hope more students and more grandparents demonstrate, not only in Moscow, but I hope they demonstrate in Washington, D.C., and we had demonstrations here in Denver, and I was right there. I feel as passionate as I did 50 years ago, And I'm forever thankful that I lived through the Vietnam War and I lived in one piece. I didn't have my mind messed up like my friend Joe, who was a Navy SEAL. I didn't die like my roommate Phil, who, yeah, you know, was just a regular guy. I mean, we lifted weights together. We played tennis together. We went and studied together. We went to class. We went to dinner and we looked at all the pretty girls there in Wonders Hall. You know, and then we danced at the mixers on Sunday nights. Everyone should have that kind of life. And so
they should have the right for that kind of life.
The right to that kind of life. And so we need more people in the UN to bring, you know, whatever, sanctions. We need more people in the streets of every country in the world, whether it's Europe or Canada or America or Australia, you know, to march for peace, you know.
Well,
you know,
we have to. Frosty, I don't. You're so right. I don't see the controllers of our God, often God-forsaken planet, ever giving up this thing of killing. There's something about it that they lust for.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I no longer, and it's almost like if we had every person, certainly men, just refuse to serve in the military or something, so that we, you know, John Lennon, you know, and God rest his soul, he sang and wrote that song, "Give Peace a Chance." Well, I think we all need to give peace a chance in our own houses, our own homes, our own kindness to our spouses, our own kindness to our neighbors, our own understanding, and if we have differences, just talk them out. Let's compromise. Let's move toward a more peaceful, more palatable, and more spiritual future. Not only, you know, in our own community, but across our own country, and certainly every country in the world. Because, you know, the one thing that I am so thankful for, and I'm very appreciative, and I have tremendous gratitude, is that I've gotten to live a life of peace, and I've gotten to live a life of contributing. You know, I very few people appreciate and really don't give a damn, but I'm proud of the fact that I've picked up a million pieces of trash around the world in the last 50 odd years, and I've been picking and I still pick up trash. I mean, it's just something that I want to give back to nature. So, what is it that drives you? What turns you on? What makes you happy? What pulls at you to fulfill yourself? You know, and it might be restoring cars. It might be doing a macrame. It might be knitting or darning. It might be any of a hundred different kinds of. You know, there's Next Door. I think many of you are on Next Door, and here in where I am in Golden, we have Next Door, and people they share their little macrame things, or they have little art classes, or they have little sculptor classes. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I'm so thankful that I was able to write stories and write books and ride. In fact, 3 days ago, before it just snowed 12 inches, I was 70 degrees out, and I was riding my bicycle. Enjoying the simple act of pedaling a bicycle to see nature and see the birds flying and see the hawks overhead and then see a fox walk right down the street in front of me. And he looks at me and I look at him and then he kind of runs into the bush. What a treat that is. A simple bicycle ride. I think I've told you before, I have a 100-ton rock up at 9,000 feet where I have to climb up on my bicycle. Yes. And I call it Meditation Rock. Well, you can meditate out in the woods, or you can meditate on your front porch. But I go up to Meditation Rock, and I look out over, a beautiful valley and the mountains and the Continental Divide. You know, that's my where I am in life. But you could be in Michigan, you could be in Maine, you could be in Florida on the beach. We all deserve to live lives of peace and fulfillment and choices and the delight of being alive, whatever it may be, dance lessons, you name it. And that's what I wish for the world. And, you know, I think it was Tiny Tim and Dickens' story. He said, God bless us one and all. And that's my wish, that God blesses us one and all, so that This is a better world for children and mothers and fathers and grandmas and grandpas.
Well, there's so much we can talk about, could talk about, but you've stated it so eloquently. I think you've said it perfectly, and I know that people listening all around the world, whatever country they're in, if they can understand English well enough, they get the message. The good people get the message. Unfortunately, there are bad people on this planet as well, and we need to learn to stay away from them as much as we can. They're very evil people. So, Frosty, my friend,
yes, sir.
Salute. All the way. And
all right.
Beautifully said. All right, you take care. We'll talk soon. Say hi to Sandy for me. Okay.
Yeah, and I'll say hi to Sandy, and God bless.
Thanks, Frosty. Okay. The one and only, without question, one of a kind on this planet, Frosty Wooldridge. All right. I hope you heard that loud and clear. We'll be right back.